Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Go For It. I'm your host, Paul Gamm, alongside Jeremy Espy. And for the next hour, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your opinions, all your ideas, and all your beliefs. And, of course, you will get a heavy dose of our opinions. And if you have an opinion, the number to call is 1-646-727-3070. That's 1-646-727-3070. And you can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgan. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgan. And you can send email messages to the show at goforit.gan@gmail.com. That's goforit.gan@gmail.com. Jeremy?
Hey, Paul. How are you?
Not too bad. Great day.
It's a great day, Paul. Really?
Always a great day to talk sports and have fun doing it. We're going to be expected to be joined by starting outside linebacker for the Eagles in 2004. He was the starting outside linebacker in the Super Bowl for the Super Bowl team, and that's Keith Adams. Keith will stop on by, talk about that season, talk about what he's doing now, and it should be interesting to get some insight from a guy who was a key contributor on that 2004 ball club, and a ball club that fell just short of winning a Super Bowl, and a ball club that it was a good year. It was a good year for the Philadelphia Eagles that year, and they finally broke through, and they finally got to the Super Bowl after three tries at it. So, should be interesting to see what he says and what he thinks. And also, we're going to talk about the big three in Miami. LeBron, Bosh, Wade. A lot of haters out here for these three guys. A lot of people.
Hey, I'm one of them. Hey, hater in the house.
Well, hi, hater. And
how you doing?
For the time being, bye, hater. The way I see it is, we can hate on if we want and be mad at these guys, but I said it before and I'll say it again. If you had the opportunity to be able to play with your friends, guys that you're friends with, guy you hang out with, guys that you develop the bond with, and ultimately guys that will help you win. It's a win-win situation for you. It's kind of a no-brainer type situation. And also, if you think about it, Miami, Florida, I should say, there's no state tax. So state income tax, I should say. So that gives you an opportunity to make comparable money. So why not go and join your boys in Miami? South Beach.
Because you want to define your own career and not have your career defined for you, number one. Because you're a competitor, number two. And because, Paul, I mean, what are we, 4 years old? We're going to go play with our friends? I mean, really. I mean, this isn't the Olympics. And that's what they're trying to turn the NBA into the Olympics.
Well,
they should go play for the Harlem Globetrotters, shouldn't they? That'd even be better.
Well, arguably, I mean, I've heard people say that – heard actually John Berry from ESPN, he talked about it, and he was saying that he doesn't believe that LeBron and Dwayne Wade can play with each other. And I kind of disagree because I believe guys of that talent and that skill set should be able to and will be able to make something like that work. Now, like we said – should be interesting how they fill out that roster. And that's going to be the key, how they fill out the roster, because as we presently speak here today, we might not even have a reason to really hate these guys like that, because you still have the Lakers who have the size that will give this team problems. I mean, as of right now, they've signed Zydrunas Ilgauskas and Juwan Howard, expected to sign there as well. In terms of big guys, not many there. And I guess Joel Anthony is expected to return to the Heat. And also they signed Haslam. But again, they're still a little undersized and a little slow in that front line. We have Bosch, who again is a Bosch, but Bosch can't stop with Dwight Howard. And Bosch would have a hard time with that front line of Andrew Bynum, Pau Gasol, and LeBar Odom, who is a sixth man, but in crunch time could play, see some time at the small forward position. So that's a problem. That's a problem for that team. And you still have Dwight Howard, who's a monster.
You're creating matchups too, but I mean, you raised an interesting point. It was something, you know, that you and I started to touch on Monday, which, and you mentioned John Barry talking about it, and it is the truth, is that, I mean, two of the big three there basically are in a large regard, they're the same player. I mean, LeBron and Dwayne Wade, I mean, they really are the two, and they're going to have to share playing the point, share being the three. How are those two guys who are really, they're equals on the court, how are they going to be able to coexist?
Well, Dwayne Wade is more of a two, and Dwayne Wade can play some point and then some two, but he's more of a one or a two. LeBron James can play the two guard, but he's more of a three. So
he's played the two his whole career, but he's played the two. I mean, he's a two.
LeBron has played the two, but he's pretty much a three.
But you know what? You're calling out numbers like it matters. Both of them are ball hogs. Both of them are scorers. Both of them are shooters.
Both of them need the ball. They're not catch-and-shoot guys, so both of them need the ball to be effective. So, both of them are going to have to streamline their game a little bit to be able to fit with what they plan on doing there in Miami. I mean, LeBron can't play the same way as he's done in the past. And Dwayne Wade, he can't play the same way like he's done in the past. So both of these guys are going to have to change their games a little bit to make this thing work. And it may be some growing pains along the way. It may
get
be
a four-year contract.
We'll see what happens, but it may be growing pains along the way. And but the pressure now that's on this team, it's going to be a lot of pressure now. I mean, because you're now expected. I mean, LeBron was throwing out 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 titles they're going to win. So now they're expected to win, and anything short of an NBA title is uncivilized, basically. So we'll have to see what happens there. But my question to everyone out there is, do you hate these guys? Do you hate these guys? I mean, I guess a lot of people are turned off by what LeBron James did in his one-hour special, The Decision, as it was called. I think some people were turned off. A lot of people were turned off by it. I mean, in some respect, it's...
But you weren't. I mean, you again, of course, everything. I was
glued to my TV set. And I watched it.
But being glued to your TV set, but watching it, Paul, and now reacting to it is what I think what you're talking about is. I think a lot of people watch it. I mean, whether you're glued to your TV set, you caught it on the internet, you watched it on YouTube, you downloaded it on your iPod. I mean, either way, I think everybody at this point has seen it. But the question is, I mean, is that really what a team, I mean, a team play, a guy that's sitting there talking about the team and this and that? I mean, it wasn't all three of them. It was just about LeBron, and it's always just about LeBron. But then he goes on TV for the next now.
Can I stop you for 1 second in terms of being
always
LeBron James has proven throughout his career to be one of the more unselfish superstars. He's averaged 7 assists in his career, and he's a guy who has definitely given a lot of props to his teammates. Now, there may be a lot. I mean, just because you commit one selfish act doesn't make you a selfish person. I mean, so let's not sit there and say all of a sudden now LeBron James is a selfish guy, because he has proven otherwise on the basketball court at least.
But on the basketball court, let me stop you there, Paul. We're not talking about on the basketball court. We're talking about off the basketball court. And, you know, I think this is...
Go ahead.
But off the basketball court, here's the first chance and the biggest chance that he was going to get to make a lasting impression in terms of, you know, this free agency was really the summer of LeBron, and it will go down in history and infamy as just that, the summer of LeBron. I mean, he has turned now free agency, you know, into a spectacle. In 2 years and 4 years, history always repeats itself, Paul. You and I both know that. So in some untold years, another free agent, another player like him will go out and become a free agent. How are they going to top this? If LeBron really wants to set his mark, if he's not a selfish player, wouldn't it have been better if he's really out there to make money for the Boys and Girls Club, if he's really out there to get scholarships from the great U of P, University of Phoenix? I mean, why doesn't he just put it in his charity and not really talk about it, not really do everything for it? Although they are coming out with a documentary about the whole summer, but we forget about that. We don't want to mention that. I mean, and we don't spend an hour focusing on me. Why didn't he spend an hour focusing on the Boys and Girls Club of America? You know, why didn't he hold a whole special or a pledge drive for people to donate to or play a season or donate your Nike contract for 1 year to the Boys and Girls Club? I mean, he gave them a couple hundred grand, Paul. In essence, what he did is he fronted the Boys and Girls Club, hoard the Boys and Girls Club, got some rinky-dick university to pony up three scholarships, which cost them nothing considering their university is pretty much online, or you can go through their drive-thru at night. I mean, I think he has an ability. If he wanted to, he could have got it from Harvard, Yale. I mean, he could have gone out and, like I said, donate a year's salary. Donate Nike, donate your profits from your Nike contract.
But
we don't want to talk about that. We want to talk about, oh, I'm going to the Heat and we're going to win championships and this, that, and the other, and the Boys and Girls Club were a big part of my life. You watched it. You were glued, Paul. How much of the interview was about the Boys and Girls Club? Maybe 20 seconds.
So you really, really...
I'm turned off. No, you know what? I told you, Paul, I think the three of them on the same team, it's stupid, it's childish. These are supposed to be, you know, athletes who compete. But I was very turned off by the summer of LeBron. I think, you know, he hasn't won anything. When he does win something, like with Barry Bonds, there's going to be an asterisk next to it. Barry Bonds cheated, and he sold out. And to me, I guess in a way...
Look, LeBron James didn't cheat anything or anybody here in this situation.
I told you he didn't cheat. He sold out.
All the guy did was do what he is allowed to do as a player of his stature and a player of his ability and a player that whose contract is up. He honored his contract. He played 7 years in Cleveland. He honored his contract. Whether Dan Gilbert says he quit or whatnot, I mean, that's irrelevant. But he honored his contract. He honored his contract and did all that he was supposed to do as a player of the Cleveland Cavaliers. He had a decision to make.
He decided,
and his decision was that he wanted to go to Miami.
As a free agent,
you're entitled to do that. That's your right. Now I'm not. You can call the man a sellout if you like, and call him all different types of names, and some justified, some unjustified. But
Paul,
I mean,
you're going to tell me, you're going to sit here and tell the callers, you're going to tell you know, the public out there, you're the best in your field. You go against athletes in your year that are comparable, you know, they, like a guy like Dwayne Wade, who won without having, you know, four superstars on his team. Sure, he had a guy like Shaq, but, you know, there's always the dynamic quote-unquote duo. But you're going to have to go out and buy your championship. That's how you want your legacy to be remembered?
Well,
friend or no friend, you want your legacy to be remembered by the fact that you couldn't do it on your own. You do understand 7 years, Paul. Now, he signed a 6-year contract if it plays out the entire 6 years. But he had 7 years in Cleveland. No matter what you tell me about what he does over the next 6 years, all I'm going to say to you is, but what did he do over the first 7 years when LeBron James was supposed to be the greatest player in basketball over those 7 years and he won no championships?
Well, he didn't win any titles. Won two MVPs.
Kobe's winning with a bunch of has-beens in L.A., mind you. They're all – they were all
– Gasol, Odom.
Paul, when they traded Gasol, he was a has-been.
Derek Fisher, he's a champion. Derek Fisher's a champion and got a guy who was clutching these past 2 years, clutch against the Magic and was clutch against the Boston Celtics this year. I mean, he single-handedly took over there in the fourth quarter against the Boston Celtics in game 3 and got that victory for the Laker ball club. So, I mean, I'm not calling these – Paul Gasol arguably could have been the MVP of that particular series. So I'm not going to – and Lamar Odom has contributed. Ron Artest had a great game 7 and hit that big three.
Oh, come on.
I'm not calling these guys has-beens. But speaking of champions and players who have played on the championship stage – we are now joined by former Eagles linebacker, Keith Adams. Keith?
Hey, how you doing?
Keith, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Now, Keith, you're a guy, you grew up, you were a son of defensive lineman Julius Adams, played a bunch of years, 16 years in the league. And how did that influence you on your decision to play football?
Well, I grew up around the game of football, and it was just a blessing to have a father that paved the way, and I was just excited to play Pop Warner football and just fell in love with the game, and I knew that's something I always wanted to do.
And so you knew at that early age that you wanted to play football for a living?
Yes. At the age of 5, I knew that I wanted to play football. I know I loved the game. And I never really put pressure on it that I had to do it for a living. I just honored the game and cherished the game and just liked to play.
Now, did you feel, I know a lot of times when we have a parent in a certain position, we feel pressure. Did you feel pressure to play football?
No, I never was pressured to play. It's just a sport that I love. I fell in love with it. I just, like I said, honored the game and just always wanted to play. But it never was a pressure that I had to play. My father never put pressure on me. It's just something I love to do.
Now, Keith, you got into the league in 2001, played with the Cowboys, and you eventually went over to the World League and were eventually picked up by the Eagles. Now, playing in the World League, what was your mindset going to Europe and having to play football and prove yourself?
Right. Well, it was a good experience. I knew that it would be an opportunity for me to go over there and try to prove myself to get back in the game. And I just wanted to get back and play in the NFL. That was always a goal of mine. So I knew that would give me an opportunity to get back in the NFL if I went over there and performed good. And luckily, you know, I was able to go to training camp, and I just worked my way from there.
Now, when you were over in the World League, how was it? How was it living in Europe and having to play football in Europe?
Well, it was different, but it's something that I'd be able to always look back on. It was something that I really cherish, going to Europe and living over there for 3 months. You know, it was something I always can tell my kids that I was over in Europe for 3 months, and I enjoyed it.
Now, you played with the Cowboys, and then eventually you were picked up in 2003 by the Eagles, and you excelled at special teams. You actually led the team in tackles in 2003. How much pride did you have in playing special teams?
Excuse me, I didn't hear your question. Say that one more time.
I'm sorry. You were a key contributor for the Eagles on special teams in 2003. You actually led the team in tackles. I mean, how much pride did you have playing on special teams?
Well, I have a passion for playing special teams. I just wanted to go out there and help the team the best way I can. If it was on special teams or defense, that's what I was willing to do. I really enjoy playing special teams. It's something, it's nothing like going down there and making plays and tearing up wedges and, you know, getting your team in a good field position, starting off on offense or defense. So I really take pride in it. I really enjoy doing it.
So Keith, I guess the next question is, how do you make the transition from being a leader in special teams to then, you know, getting it in the third down and then becoming a starter as a linebacker?
Well, I always viewed myself as a starter. Even when there was people starting in front of me, I knew what kind of talent I had. I knew if I just got the right opportunity at the right time that I can step in and be a starter. When I was in college, I was able to lead the nation in tackles as a starting linebacker for Clemson for 3 years, finished second in the Buckets Award. So I always viewed myself as being a starter. I was just waiting for God just to put me in the right opportunity at the right time so I can just prove that I'm a starter in the NFL.
So now, Keith, you played in the 2003, you played in the NFC Championship game against the Carolina Panthers. Talk about how tough and difficult it was to lose in that championship game.
Well, to get that close to have one game away from going to the Super Bowl, you know, it's always, you know, a devastating experience because you never know if you'll get back to having that chance to get that close. I mean, people play all their career and they don't even get the opportunity to go to the Super Bowl. So it was a tough, but, you know, we felt as a team that we were still in the prime of our careers and we can get back in that position. So we just said we'd just try again next year.
Now, did you feel you were the better team? Because I actually thought I thought you were the better team in that particular game against the Panthers.
You know, it really doesn't matter what you feel when the scoreboard in and the team that has the best score, that has the highest score, you know, the ones to win. So it doesn't matter if you're the best team, but you might not be the best team that day or that night. So, you know, you just live with the results and you just keep on moving.
Now, I wanted to go back. I want to go back in that particular playoff run, and I want to go back to that Packers game, 4th and 26, the big play McNabb to Freddie Mitchell. Did you think the game was over then?
Well, you know, you always have hope, but you know, realistically, when you're looking at it, it's 4th and 26. You know, when it counts your team out to the scoreboard, say zero, but you know, that's a big play. You know, that's a big play, and you know, it was a great play by Donovan. It was a great play by Freddie to catch it and hang on to it. So, you know, it's just two great players making great plays.
So when you hit the 4th and 26 and now you go into essentially Super Bowl, do you guys feel like it's your year at that point? Do you feel like you get to that point and now, in a way, like fate's going to carry you through?
Well, you definitely feel like momentum is on your side when things like that happen. You know, you feel like, all right, we was able to win that game and we're going into the next game, so you felt like we had momentum going in. But each and every game is different, so you have to just go out there. When you get between the white lines, you have to play.
Now going into the 2004 season, you guys added Terrell Owens, T.O., that big wide receiver that, quite frankly, you guys needed. Did you feel like going into that season something was special about that team?
Well, we know we had a special team. We know we had a lot of leadership with Brian Dawkins and Jeremiah Trotter on defense. We had Donovan, Westbrook, and we was a healthy team. And then to add Terrell Owens and, you know, a couple other pieces to the puzzle, you know, we felt like we was that close the year before, so we felt like definitely going into that season we had the opportunity to win it all.
Now, during that season, you guys lost T.O., and kind of what was the mindset of the team when T.O. went down? Because he was having a great year at the time and ended up with a great year. But what was the mindset of the team when T.O. went down?
Well, that's the whole thing. It's a team. You know, it's a team sport. People go down each and every week. You know, you never want to lose a player like that because he's a great player. But, you know, you still have to have the nucleus of your team to come together and other people have to step up. And fortunate enough, they stepped up and they got us to the Super Bowl that year.
You know, one of the questions I think a lot of the listeners and the fans of Philadelphia always wonder is college. How did you know T.O. in the locker room and on the practice? So everyone knew him, especially that 2004 season when he stepped out on the field. He had a really good year, you know, in his whole career. But was he the way he portrays himself now in the media, a guy who comes in and works and tries hard, or was he how the media portrayed him in later years, you know, a prima donna and a meddler?
Well, you know, the media can portray a lot of things. I wouldn't say T.O. is a prima donna because if anybody ever see him practice, I mean, he's one of the hardest working guys in the business. I mean, the guy practices hard and he works hard. And he's a legitimate pro. You know, he takes pride in what he does and he gives you all that he has. So, you know, you just have to accept that. And you have to be thankful for a guy that doesn't go out there and lay it out on the line each and every day, not only during the games, but also on the practice field as well.
Now, you guys go into the playoffs. You're the number one seed. You're the favorite, again, to go to the Super Bowl. And you have the home game against the Falcons, NFC title game. What was your mindset going into that game? Were you nervous? How did you feel going into that game?
I mean, it was real exciting for me. I'm originally from Atlanta, and to be playing Atlanta to go to the Super Bowl, I mean, that was really exciting for me, and I was just pumped up, ready for the game. And I think the whole team was like, we got back to this point, and we had to, you know, make destiny. We was like, we're destined to win it. We're destined to win the game, and we was going to do it no matter what. We was going to make sure that we won it.
Now, describe the feeling of when that final horn sounded and you knew that you were headed to the Super Bowl.
That's a blessing. It's definitely a blessing. It lets you know that, you know, a lot of the hard work, you know, is just paying off, you know. We knew going to the Super Bowl, people don't always get there. And, you know, we just view it as a blessing. We still, you know, knew we had one more game to face, and that was to win the Super Bowl. But, you know, looking back on it now, you know, it was just a blessing from God to even have the opportunity to play at a caliber game like that.
Now, we're in the Super Bowl now. We're moving on to the Super Bowl. You're playing against the team that your father played on, the New England Patriots.
Yes.
Was there kind of mixed emotions there?
No. Me, being with the Eagles, I was loyal. I'm a loyal person. That was my father. That was his father. And, you know, I mean, it was a blessing to be able to play against a team that he played for and also to play him in the Super Bowl. I don't know if that ever happened before. But, you know, I was excited. He was excited. You know, he's loyal to his son, so he was rooting for the Eagles, and our heart was just with the Eagles at the time.
Now, looking back at that game, do you sometimes look at some of the missed opportunities you may have had there?
Well, I mean, anybody can look at missed opportunities and say, shoulda, woulda, coulda, but you know, the thing is, other teams, they had opportunities that they probably missed too and said, shoulda, woulda, coulda. You know, we just have to give credit to the Patriots. They won the game. And, you know, it was a good game. Unfortunately, we lost, I think, about 3 points. But, you know.
Yeah, 24-21,
yeah. Like I said, it was just a blessing to even get the opportunity to play in that game.
It was a good Super Bowl. And, man, you guys were close, real close. And but like you said, it has to be a great blessing to be able to play in that game and on that stage. Did you find yourself overhyped going into that game? Did you kind of have to settle yourself down?
I wouldn't say that. You know, I'm always the same way when I play. You know, I'm a high energy guy, and I'm gonna leave everything that I have on the field. That's how I always played the game. That's how I always will play the game. So going into that game, I just, you know, viewed it as, all right, this is the top game, but you view it as each and every game, how you go into each and every game, because you still have to do the same things. You have to practice all week. You have to study, and you have to go out and execute. So So we knew that, and that's what we tried to do.
How hard, Keith, you know, in reality, though, is it to make the Super Bowl just another game when, you know, there's a week off in between and there's media day and there's the cameras and there's interviews, the game starts later and it is the Super Bowl?
It's a lot of media attention that goes into the game, definitely. I mean, it's like one of the biggest sports venues that there is in sports. But you still have to line up. You still have to play the game. It's still football, you know what I mean? It could be a lot of stuff. There's a lot of smoke and mirrors behind the game to make it seem like it's bigger than what it is. But the team still have to go out there, line up, execute, and they still have to play.
Do you see, the one of the questions, I guess, it's interesting, is you see now the Super Bowl was played, there was the All-Star game in between, and when you were playing, it was there was certainly that bye week. I mean, as a former player, does this structure work where this year there was so much, you know, talk about who wants to get injured in between, and was that productive?
Well, you know, I mean, I think the NFL is just trying different things to see what really works, see what, you know, just always trying to improve the game. And you got to give hats off to Roger Goodell for that because he's, you know, always trying to improve the game and make the game better. So, you know, we just see how it continues to go. And if the fans like it, and that's what we're here for, is to please the fans and to make the game exciting for them. So if they like it, then, you know, that's a good thing.
Now, you guys will lose to, in the Super Bowl, like we said, to the Patriots. The following season, you're a full-time starter, outside linebacker. You had the T.O. thing and the T.O. McNabb thing. Did that really – how much did that affect the team?
No, I don't get caught up in anything with adversity. That's just off of my belief as a true Christian, a person that under God. You're not saying unity is strength. So I don't get caught up in the adversity, and I don't allow myself to even focus on any of that stuff. So, you know, I really never got into that. I'm always a person that tries to stay positive and upbeat and do the best thing for the team.
Did you feel like it affected the team at any point, on any level?
You know what? It's not my place to say whether it affected the team or not. You know, because you know, different things happen, and you just have to move on. We're all professionals, so we always have to move on and strive to do the best that we can do.
Okay. Now you eventually would leave the Eagles and sign with Carolina. You were cut there, and you ended up in Cleveland, you finished your career in Cleveland in 2007. Now, I read an article back in 2009 of you talking about a comeback. Are you still in the comeback stage?
Well, God's blessed me with the opportunity to come back into the NFL. And, you know, I have some couple of things that's working out with my agent right now. So, you know, I'm just working, and I'm ready to go. I'm in the best shape of my life. And I've been able to be away from the game for 2 years and really have that passion back. And I think I've got more focus. So whenever I go with a team, I know that I'll be able to help them out, especially on special teams.
Now, these two years that you have been out of football, how much have you missed the game?
I missed the game, but it allowed me to get my life right. You know, I really focused back on my religion, getting back right with the Lord Jesus Christ, and you know, He's been the center and head of my life, and He's opened up doors that no man can shut, and I'm just thankful to have the opportunity to come into the position I'm in right now and to be in the best shape of my life and to be hungrier than ever for the game. So, I mean, he knew what he was doing when he removed me, and he knows what he's doing when he's putting me back in.
So you're expecting to be in somebody's training camp this season?
I would be in somebody's training camp this season.
All right. Well, we're definitely going to look out for that.
All right. You know, Keith, I guess Paul had asked, like, you know, how much did you miss the game? I guess from a guy who's been out of football two and a half years, 3 years, and does miss it. I mean, does the work ethic is it harder? Was it? Did you find it kind of harder to get back into the grind, or being away from it? Was it easier for you to kind of put those extra hours in?
No, I'm always a person that when I always face adversities. I mean, I was a 7-round draft pick when I led the nation in tackles, just because of my height of being 5'10". You know, when I was led the Eagles in special team tackles, I thought I was gonna go to the Pro Bowl. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. And you know, I was a person that take adversity and just let it motivate me. And with whichever team that get me this year, when people see me, they'll wish that they had got me this stuff. They'll be like, wow. Because like I said, I'm in the best shape of my life, and I know the passion that I have. I never had an injury, and I'm as healthy as ever, and I'm as hungry as ever to be the best player that I could be.
And so, I mean, it's good that you're going to make a return. You're going to make a comeback to the league. Now, do you have a desired destination?
I have some teams. I have some teams that's interested right now. You know,
okay.
I really just don't want to tip my hand real quick, but I have some teams that's
okay.
interested, and I'm just excited.
And we're definitely excited to you know, see you get another opportunity, because I watched you, especially on special teams, and also when you got into the starting lineup, you played with a lot of emotion, a lot of passion, and it was good to see you on the football field. And it's good to see guys out there who play with that type of emotion and that type of passion.
Yeah. And, you know, I really just I do it for the love of the game. I do it for the fans. I really just want to thank my fans for, you know, all the support. And a lot of people just been telling me, you know, you can really make a comeback. And, I mean, I've had a lot of support on the comeback. And, like I said, the Lord has opened up a door for me, and I'm just thankful. And I have to just give all glory and honor to God.
And then it's good. It's great to see you get that opportunity. What are you doing now, Keith?
Well, I own two antique stores, and just really enjoying when I was retired. I went back to Clemson, finishing up my degree, and then I went into two antique stores and just training each and every day, just, you know, waiting for the opportunity to present itself to get back into the NFL.
And it looks like you're saying, you will definitely get that opportunity to make it back to the NFL. We're definitely on this show. We're definitely going to be rooting for you and wish you nothing but the best in the future.
I really appreciate it. I really appreciate it.
So this is we're talking with Keith Adams, former Eagles linebacker for the team. He was the starting linebacker actually during the Super Bowl run, and played in the Super Bowl against the New England Patriots. And Keith just disclosed to us that he will be making a return to the NFL at some point, and he's in the best shape of his life. And so he's going to make that step, and hopefully, and we're like I said, we're wishing you nothing but the best, and we hope you get that next shot in the league.
Thank you. I just turned 30, and, you know, I know my father, I guess it's basically maybe the genes. He played too. He's 37. He played 15 years in the NFL, and, you know, he was able to continue to play for a long time. So I really think it's in the genes, in the blood. And I might end up close by where he was at.
Don't tip your head, Keith. Don't tip your head.
That's right. You tell him, Paul.
So how is your father?
My father's doing great. My father's doing great. He's enjoying being retired, and he's just he's just really mentoring me. He trains me hard. You know, he's during this whole coming back process, he's really been training me hard. And I can tell you what, he's the strongest me. He still bench presses over 500 pounds.
Wow!
What, you know what, Keith? What prompted you being away from the game for 2-3 years? What prompted you to want to make that comeback, to want to train and to get, you know, to go through the rigors of the NFL, and you being a player who had to even go overseas to prove yourself?
Really just the fans. You know, I love the game of football. I love the NFL. And then, you know, to go to be a mentor to a lot of the younger guys, you see a lot of people when they lead the game of football, when they're in the game of football, they don't really set themselves up outside of football, different things like that. And God has given me the opportunity to really, you know, be able to mentor people that down here in Atlanta that I'm mentoring, and to network with a lot of people like Evander Holyfield and different things. So I can really just set up a lot of people outside the game of football and life in general to make them a better overall people. Because, you know, a lot of the NFL players get bad scrutiny about it's all about money and the glitz and glamour and fame. But we're people that have lives where, you know, a lot of Christian people, a lot of family people, and we're people that, you know, try to do a lot of things in the community. So I'm doing a lot of things down in Atlanta that's beneficial, that's positive, and, you know, I want to bring a lot of that to the NFL.
So now you're going to definitely do that, and you're going to bring that to the NFL when you make that comeback and you make that return. And so are you planning? You're going to be out there training tomorrow?
I'd be up before the sun come up every morning.
That's good. You're definitely putting in the work and the dedication. When you after the Browns in 2007, did you think it was over? Did you think it was over then?
I never thought it was over. I knew I was young, and you know, I'm a person that knows God enough to know that, you know, sometimes He removes you to clean up some things in your life. Sometimes He'll take you away just to bring you back at another time. So, you know, I just, with my faith and just having faith and just trusting God, I knew that it wasn't over. Just put me in a resting place to get me in a better position.
So, Keith, we thank you for stopping by here. And like I said before, I'll say it again, we wish you nothing but the best of luck as you continue on your comeback trail to the NFL. And you got to stop on by once you get on somebody's roster.
Okay, and when I get back in the NFL this year, I want you to give me a call back when I make the team. And I'd like
definitely,
doing that interview.
Definitely, we got to get you back, and we want to talk about how successful you are being on the NFL field. This
Amen.
Season.
God bless you. God bless you,
right,
very much. Thank you very much.
Take care, sir.
So there you go. Well, you almost got it out of him. Your crack interviewing skills. You almost landed the big disclosure there.
I mean, I was trying to get in a roundabout way, but I mean, the man just wants to want to play his hand. But I think he kind of gave us an indication where he may be going, or where he may possibly be going, but. I mean, like he said, he's only 30 years old, so, I mean, he still has a lot of tread on those tires. And I guess he believes that he can still contribute and help an NFL franchise. But it was good to get his insight, especially about that 2004 season and also what happened with T.O. and then Donovan and everything with that. But we wish him definitely the best of luck. And he definitely has to come back and talk about him making it back into the NFL. So let me know what you think. If you want to talk about that 2004 Eagles team and that Super Bowl run, fell a little short, but if you want to talk about it, give us a holler. And also we're talking LeBron, Wade, Bosh. Do you dislike that new big three in Miami? Are you hating on that big three in Miami? Do you wish them nothing but bad? I mean, Dan Gilbert said that LeBron's going to take that curse that's in Cleveland on down to Miami. Probably sour grapes, but on his part. But, I mean, we'll see what happens and whether he will take that curse down to Miami. The number's to call, 1-646-727-3070. That's 1-646-727-3070. And you can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pGant. That's blogtalkradio.com/pGant. And you can send email messages to the show at goforit.gant@gmail.com. That's goforit.gant@gmail.com. What do you think? You think Keith will make that return?
Well, yeah, I mean, you saw this year, Paul, you know, Jeremiah Trotter came back, and like you said, he's 30, and, you know, the NFL is the expansion, everything has a way of circling back. He certainly had a great career with special teams, and he was, and you know, knowing how to get in the NFL, I think, will give you a competitive advantage to get back into the NFL. If he, you know, you get there, and I think you know how, what it takes to stay there. So I think, you know, it lends itself, and he certainly seemed to get up earlier than you and I are to start training. So I think that will give him a better advantage.
And he definitely seems hungry, and he seems confident in his ability, and that he seems confident that he'll be able to get back into the league. And I mean, you know, a lot of guys, I mean, when you're, like you said, he's 30 years old. I mean, 2007, he's 27 years old. When the game is kind of taken away from you in some respect, you, especially at a young age, you feel like you are missing something. You definitely probably don't want it to end the way it ended for him. And, you know, he definitely wants to come back and prove that he can still play and that he can still do it. And he still has, like he said, he still has a lot of tread. He still has a lot of tread on those tires, and he still has a lot of ability. And so hopefully for his sake, that'll translate to an NFL roster and him sticking on with somebody. But he was a decent starter for the Eagles. And like I said, he was a starter in the Super Bowl. And he started that whole postseason run and started the whole next year. So he definitely was a key contributor for the Eagles and proved that he can play on this big stage. So, like I said, we'll see what happens.
No doubt. I mean, I think, you know, we have all summer to talk about, you know, we can certainly watch him. We'll watch some of the Eagles and certainly hear you, you know, be more of the same apologist to in regards to the Heat and being friendly with all your buddies and playing on the same team. You know, maybe him and a couple of friends could go start an expansion team and they could all play together.
I don't think they have the money to necessarily do something like that.
Yeah, well, you don't know, Paul. He may have saved.
Overall, I mean, if I look, going back to the Heat, like I said before, I said it earlier in the show, if you have the opportunity to play with your friends, guys who have done it in this league, guys who have proven to be successful on the big stage, guys like a Dwayne Wade who's won a title, guys like a Chris Bosh who's been an all-star and has been 20-10 throughout his whole career. If you have that opportunity to play on that big stage, you're going to take advantage of that. And that's basically what LeBron and D. Wade and Chris Bosh have decided to do. They have decided that, hey, this is a great opportunity. I mean, how many times can you say that you can play with D. Wade, who's arguably a top three basketball player, and Chris Bosh, arguably the best power forward in the game and arguably a top 10 player? I mean, how many times can you say that you will be able to play with two top 10 players? I mean, how many times can you say that? You can't. You can't say it. And but I guess the knock right now on LeBron in that situation is, and then Charles Barkley said it, that, I mean, at the age of 25, he wanted to be the guy that you know, he wanted to be the man. He wanted to be the go-to guy. He wanted to be all those things. And he said it would have meant more to win a title as the go-to guy, as the number one guy. And, you know, he and in that respect, you do question whether LeBron has that mental toughness and that a championship heart and spirit to do it by himself. And then that's, I mean, obviously you don't win a championship by yourself, but he was the guy in Cleveland, and he was the guy that in Cleveland he was the guy that led him to the 60 wins in consecutive seasons and led him to the 2007 NBA Finals. He was the guy. He was the guy there. And the shortcomings of the Cleveland Cavaliers, I think, in some respect, come down to LeBron James. I think the team around him was decent enough to win a title. I just don't think he couldn't take them to that next level, that next level. He couldn't do it. He couldn't do it. He couldn't do it by himself. But I think if he would have stayed in Cleveland, which I advocated and which I tried to convince LeBron, I made my pitch to LeBron. Obviously, he didn't listen to me, but I made my pitch to LeBron, and I told LeBron, look, man, look, you will be a legend in Cleveland. They will wash your feet in Cleveland if you win titles there. They would wash your feet. They would worship the ground that you walk on if you won titles in Cleveland. And the legacy that you would have in Ohio would be out of this world. I mean, you're an Ohio boy, and it would have to be a great feeling, since you are an Ohio boy, that you would be a legend and guys would love you and forever. Now you're hated, and you're on the level of Art Modell to some people. Art Modell, the owner of the Cleveland Browns, who former owner of the Cleveland Browns, who moved the team from Cleveland to Baltimore. So you would be hated. You're now on that level of hate. People hate you now. LeBron, and at one point in your career, you were loved. You were a guy who was definitely loved by all. And you, not by all, of course, but by many. You were loved by many. So now you've become a public enemy number one to some people. And the mural has been officially taken down in Cleveland. And Dan Gilbert came after you, the owner of Cleveland, which was not warranted and it was unjustified. I mean, Dan, if Dan, I don't know why you want to pay a guy like LeBron James, if you feel he's a quitter, $120-some-odd million, and wanted to keep him on your team if you felt he was a quitter. If you felt he was all these things, why would you want him on the team? Why did you actively negotiate? Why did you try to make a pitch to him to come on back if you felt that this guy was a quitter and quit on your team and all those things that you said about him? I mean, why would you want that on your franchise? Why would you want that on your team if you felt like he was all these things? So obviously, he's a jilted lover. And, you know, when you're a jilted lover, you say things and talk about a person because you're jilted. And you're unhappy because that person left you. And I made the analogy. I made the analogy on Monday, and I'll make it again. What happened was for 7 years, LeBron James put a ring, an engagement ring, on the Cleveland Cavaliers. And throughout that time, They stayed together. They hung in there for 7 years. They were engaged for 7 years. And now Cleveland wanted the marriage. They wanted the 6 years. They wanted that 6 years. They wanted the marriage now. They wanted LeBron to sign that six-year deal. Well, along the way, LeBron decided that, you know what, I want to take my talents to South Beach in Miami. But in doing so, LeBron didn't tell the Cavaliers that he wanted to do that. He didn't tell them. He didn't personally tell the Cavaliers. So he goes on national TV, the big stage, and tells the world that I'm taking my talents to South Beach and play with the Miami Heat. That's what he tells the world. And in doing so, he basically dumped the Cleveland Cavaliers on national TV. Without even telling him, he dumped them on national TV. So, I mean, let's be honest. If you're with a woman for or a man for 6-7 years, and they dumped you on national TV without bothering to tell you first, you probably would not be happy with them. You probably would not be happy with them. So, Dan Gilbert comes out now and, being unhappy with LeBron James, he said LeBron James quit in games two, said LeBron James quit in game four, said LeBron James quit in game five, and said LeBron James quit in game six, the closeout game. And this is the Celtics series we're referring to. Well, Dan, I mean, game five, he didn't play well, obviously. Play horrible, actually. In game six, there was something different about LeBron in game six. I can't explain it. The swagger wasn't there. The energy just didn't seem like it was there. There was something different with the guy. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it was. I don't think he quit. By no means do I think he quit. But I just think there was something different about the guy. There was something different about the guy. For whatever reason. I don't know what it was. You probably know better than I do, Dan. But I don't know what it was. But, I mean, and ultimately, the Cavaliers lost. And at that point, I mean, I thought the guy, if you're going to go on national TV, I did not think the guy would rub it in the face of Ohio and Cleveland and tell them that he's taking his talents to South Beach. I thought if he was going to go on national TV, what he would do is say that he's coming back to Cleveland. That's what I thought he would do if he's going on national TV. That's what I thought he would do. But he surprised me. But there was a story that, I mean, all reports came out earlier in that day that all indications pointed to Miami and everything pointed to Miami. But he surprised me and going on national TV and doing it. But, hey, the guy made money. Well, at least he made money supposedly for the Boys and Girls Club of America. Got some scholarships from the University of Phoenix for his foundation. So, I mean, he got some things out of the deal, I guess. And like I said, I criticized his team for the decision to go on national TV and make his decision for the simple fact is I think it was a bad PR move on his part. But I have to admit, I watched. I looked forward to it. I enjoyed it. I mean, it was drawn out a little bit. The decision was supposedly going to be made in the first 10 minutes. I think it was about 25 after where he finally, maybe it was 20, 25 after where he finally told the world where he was going, and that was Miami. And right now there's a big bullseye on Miami. A lot of people are hating on Miami, and a lot of people are rooting against these guys. So we'll see how that plays out. But again, I'm not ready to crown these guys with not even the Eastern Conference championship or of course the World Championship. I'm not ready to crown these guys. I'm not going to do it. I'm not ready to do it. And I'm not going to do it. I refuse to do it at this point. I mean, I think Orlando has some pieces. And Orlando is still a contender, still a championship team. The Boston Celtics, a contender, still a championship team. So, I mean, I don't know. We're going to see if they'll get out the East. And then, of course, you got the Lakers, who with Kobe, Pau Gasol, Lamar Odom, they re-signed Derek Fisher, brought him back. They added Steve Blake to the mix. Andrew Bynum. If hopefully he's healthier for them. But you had all these, they're still a formidable champion in Los Angeles. So we can't sleep on that. Like I talked about this on this show before, don't become a prisoner of the moment. Don't get so excited over, okay, we got a big three in the mix. Now let's crown them. And like Denny Green said, if you're going to crown them, crown them. And so, you know, don't crown them. Don't crown them. Don't crown them just yet. Don't crown them just yet. See how this thing plays out. See how they fill out that roster. They added Mike Miller, which is good. They added that's a shooter. Mike Miller's a sniper. And Wade's going to kick it out to him. LeBron's going to kick it out to him. That's a sniper there. And, again, you added Udonis Haslam. You brought him back into the mix. And you had Zydrunas Ilgauskas, who still has some game left in him. We'll see how that works out for him and the Miami Heat. We want to thank Keith Adams, former Eagles linebacker, for coming on to the show. Keith is planning a return, a comeback. So he will be back, and he plans on being in somebody's camp this upcoming season. So, and also, if you want to listen to past shows, go to blogtalkradio.com/pgan. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgan. Thanks.
Thanks, everybody, for joining the show.